Now, in the 2016 general election, roughly 100 million people who were eligible to vote did not cast a ballot. According to the United States Election Project, that's roughly 43% of the voting age population. There are a lot of reasons why people do go to the polls, ranging from maybe enthusiasm about a particular candidate or a desire to see certain policies put into place. But a recent study from the Knight Foundation wanted to look specifically at why people did not vote and what their politics looked like outside of the voting booth. And the organization looked at non-voters in swing states, including here in Wisconsin. Our next guest joins us to talk about the study, what can be learned about non-voters, and what impact that non-voting bloc could have if they all went to the polls. Philip Chen is an assistant professor of political science at Beloit College and an expert on voting behavior. Phil, welcome back to Central Time.
Happy to be here. Thanks.
Well, what was your initial reaction to this study? Pretty interesting study.
It's a really interesting study. It's a different take on a common question, right? We tend to try to explain, well, why do people vote and how can we mobilize people to vote? And I think this is a really interesting idea to say, okay, so what do the demographics of the people who are not voting look like? And we have sort of historically some ideas of what that looks like, but it's always good to sort of keep updating our priors and understand how what these groups look like at this point.
They dug into a lot of different things, and they asked specifically, why don't you vote? Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of different reasons, but did some common themes jump out at you?
The common themes to me are what we would term political efficacy, right? Not feeling like you're vote matters, and then not having resources, right? We've talked a lot in the past about resources being a way to get to the polls, why you turn out, and so that the flip side to that. But I think that efficacy, not feeling connected to, not feeling that your vote matters, really jumped out to me in the study.
Right. Let's dig into that. A lot of people, I think, might just do the simple math. I'm one person out of, you know, lots of people.
Yep.
Doesn't matter if I show up the polls or not. And how, assuming that it is a public good for more people to vote, which maybe we could talk about whether it is or not, but let's assume that for now. If people are feeling like that, how do you overcome that?
Well, I think the trick is, first off, civic duty. I mean, we can't base this idea that our vote matters off of simple math, right? This has been, you know, way back into the 50s, we saw Downs trying to say, well, we can't explain voting with math, because if we use math, nobody should vote, right? The chance of you being the critical vote is minuscule. And so we've added in what has been largely termed the D term, the civic duty term. And so to me, yes, absolutely, you can't just break it down to math. The question is, how do we increase those feelings of efficacy? And then how do we connect people to the political process to make them want to get involved?
Another answer that I think is related in some ways, but a sense that the system is rigged. No matter what I vote, there is some sort of predetermined conclusion by people, forces beyond my control that renders my vote meaningless.
Yeah, and I think there's a few things going on with that claim. I think part of it is, yeah, maybe there is a tendency to say, okay, I've seen, you know, I vote, the same thing happens. It sort of goes hand in hand with that idea that your vote doesn't matter. It seems that, you know, maybe there's something about a two-party system. And then I think some of it is what we might term sort of rationalization, right? Saying, okay, well, why didn't you vote? Well, because the system's rigged, right? Oh, that's why I didn't get involved. And so there's a causal story that goes both ways. Some of it is actually feeling like the system is rigged. Some of it might also be it's an easy way to explain why you chose not to vote.
There were a couple different answers related to the candidates. Some, I don't like the candidates. Mm-hmm. Some, I don't know enough about the candidates.
Yeah. And I think, again, I don't know enough about the candidates is a classic resource story. And if we want to talk about the role that education plays, education is consistently one of the strongest predictors of turning out an election, as well as time, income to a lesser extent. These are the kinds of things that allow you to be involved in the political process, feel knowledgeable, feel efficacious, feel like you know something about the candidates. If you lack that time, that education, the connection to politics, yeah, you're going to feel like you don't know enough about the candidates. Again, whether or not you like the candidates, that can kind of, you know, that's a fairly idiosyncratic thing. I think there are plenty of reasons we can get into with that, but in any given election, it's hard to pin down exactly what's driving not liking the candidates.
Talking to Philip Chen from Beloit College, looking at a new report on non-voters in the United States. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions. If you don't vote, love to hear from you about why at 800-642-1234. Now, the why people don't vote was a part of this story, but they also looked at what the politics of the people who didn't vote were, to the extent that they had them. And when we look at the numbers, not vote would have beaten Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump by a big margin.
It would have.
In 2016. And I think there's a perception sometimes that from people across the political spectrum, if we could get those non-voters to the polls, they're going to agree with my side and we'd win in landslides all the time. What do we see when we try to dig into their politics?
I think what we see is what political scientists have sort of known, which is non-voters tend to be politically disengaged. They aren't particularly they don't have an affinity for one party or the other. The parties may say, well, if we got them involved, if we gave them information, we could sway them to our side. That's a harder case to make than just saying these people inherently, because of some demographic characteristics, should support our party. The evidence seems to suggest non-voters are kind of all over the map and not really tied into any one political party.
And they also asked non-voters about a lot of different issues. Mm-hmm. And it looked like on some issues they were a little to the the right of the voting electorate. Other issues they were a little to the left. So it might be that if every single one of them voted, the results would come out about the same?
It might be. I think what I would caution us to not take too much stock in issue positions and party positions among non-voters. What we know is that those kind of survey responses tend to be the result of party cues, of information that we have from our party affiliations, from the people that we talk to, the politics that we pay attention to. When you aren't particularly engaged in politics, there's a lot more noise. It tends to be a lot more noise in those measures. And so responding Democrat, Republican, responding conservative, liberal, responding yes or no on certain issues might be is almost certainly a noisier measure when we're talking about non-voters who are not feeling particularly politically engaged.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Mark is with us in Hartford. Mark, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My comment was that I haven't voted in a long time, and I don't vote because I guess maybe truly or not, I've been under this impression that it increases your chances of being called for jury duty. And I've also heard that jury duty doesn't pay well. And as a millennial that's living pretty close to paycheck, I can't afford to do that. And so even though I'm pretty fired up about some of the candidates and stuff this year, it just makes me nervous. I don't know if there's any truth to that, though.
Mark, thanks for the call. I want to say in the results, the survey results of why people didn't vote, jury duty, fear of jury duty was up there. I think it was 7 or 8%, something like that. That's keeping a significant number of people like Mark away from the polls.
Yeah, I don't believe there's any connection between turnout and being called for jury duty. I believe that list is drawn from a number of other sources in the state. I don't know the specifics of how the jury duty list is drawn, but it most definitely is not weighted by whether or not you voted. So you can rest assured that if you vote, you're not in. I don't see any reason that that's increasing your chances of being called for jury duty. I think it's a subject for a different time whether jury duty should be paid in such a way to allow for more widespread participation, but I don't think there's any evidence that suggests that simply turning out to vote is going to radically increase your chances. I don't think there's any kind of weighting in jury duty.
Mark, thanks a lot for that call. And I think you've inspired a future segment on Central Time looking at jury duty, what goes into it and how people get selected. Thanks a lot for calling in. Well, I kind of teased the question and it's definitely a value judgment. How do we evaluate that? The premise I gave earlier, it is better if more people vote. Is that in and of itself a good thing?
I think, there's no denying that ideally we want people to go vote, right? That the more people who decide to go vote, that's a good testament to the health of our democratic system, right? If more people feel that their vote matters, that they are engaged in politics, that they want to make a difference, that they want to have a say in the process, that's a good thing about the health of our democratic system, regardless of outcomes. So even if all we did was inspire these 100 million people to go out and vote by saying, listen, you do have a say in the process. If it doesn't sway the effect of the election, the outcome of the election at all, it's still a good thing if people have more faith in the democratic system, right? Faith in democracy, legitimacy of the system is what what keeps the system going, right? We rely on that. And so it's a little bit of a dodge of the question, but to say what we really care about is that kind of legitimacy or faith in the system.
We're talking to Philip Chen, assistant professor of political science at Beloit College. He's with us to talk about a recent Knight Foundation study that examined why people who are eligible to vote decide not to participate in elections, like numbers like 100 million in the last election, the last presidential election. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the state of voting? If you vote, what brings you to the polls? If you don't vote, we'd like to hear from you with your reasons for not voting. Call 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we continue our conversation about why people who are able to vote ultimately don't. In 2016, it's estimated that more than 100 million people who were eligible to cast a ballot did not in the presidential election. Our guest is Philip Chen, assistant professor of political science at Beloit College. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Tell us why you do or don't vote. Back to your calls now. Anthony is with us in Oshkosh. Anthony, hi.
Good evening, Rob. So one of the reasons I don't vote, or I haven't voted, I'm 22 right now, so the last election was the last one, is just because the divided red-blue Republican-Democrat sided sort of thing. A lot of views aren't represented, such as the Libertarian Party. A lot of people feel that even just voting for them, it just sort of get canceled out. And the mainstream media, they typically cover Democrat or Republican, nothing in between. So that's what I think is why a good number of people don't just show up.
Anthony, thanks a lot for the call. And that's a complaint I hear fairly often, Philip. You have to take a set menu. Mm-hmm. If you think of this one thing and you want Republicans for that, you have to accept all the other stuff. Same if you're voting Democratic. We don't have that multi-party democracy where we can find a party that fits us better.
Right. And I think Anthony is touching on that idea of efficacy, right? That my vote doesn't matter or that I'm not represented in the system. And I think it's captured in that idea of what we might term internal or external efficacy. So, again, how do we break the party system? The party system is in many cases, in many ways, baked into the design of the U.S. political system. That's another long line of research suggesting that, there's often sort of third parties that come into the system, but it's hard to create a true sort of lasting third party, given the structure of the American electoral system. Famously, sort of one of the only laws that political scientists get to claim is Duverger's law, which says, given the system of design in the U.S., you are basically locked into a two-party system. And so there's a lot of things going on. But I think that's absolutely right, is that part of that efficacy is feeling that you aren't represented by the parties.
Thanks for the call. We'll go now to Leslie in Green Bay. Leslie, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to tell us, Leslie?
I've been a voter all my life, and yes, I've even done the jury duty, which I don't mind doing. But that being said, this is the first year I just feel like it's hopeless to bother going out to vote. What? I feel like with the gerrymandering that's in place, I feel that the way the president is taking all this power away from Congress, even if we voted in a different president, I don't think he's ever going to leave. I think it's just gotten to the point where it's hopeless.
Leslie, thanks for the call. And for various reasons, maybe not matching up exactly with Leslie's, or maybe a lot of people feel either a hopelessness or a disgust where politics is a four-letter word. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's a, if we can quantify that. Do you see that out there, though, Phil?
I think I do. And I think one of the things that Leslie touched on was this idea of gerrymandering, right? That as the districts, as congressional districts have become more and more drawn to favor either certain parties or incumbents, if you feel like if you really want your vote to matter, it's hard to matter when the districts are drawn to be so consistently favoring one party or the incumbents. And so I would say that I think she's touched on one of the, you know, part of that, like hopelessness or lack of efficacy. That being said, I would say I would encourage people. This is not to say those these are like go out and vote. Like it's important. It sends important signals, I think, to members of Congress. It sends important signals to the president, to candidates. Voting sends signals even if it doesn't come through in outcomes.
Leslie, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Philip Chen from Beloit College about a new study looking at non-voting in America, why people don't vote, what their politics are or aren't. Back to your calls now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Hey, I'm so excited. I couldn't disagree with that last caller more. I think these Trump rallies are going to bring out so many people voting. I think whoever the Democratic candidate is going to bring a bunch of people out voting. I think we're going to have record turnout this presidential election. We might actually hit 200 million voters. I say that because I know Democrats in Douglas County, northern Wisconsin, the last presidential race, we hit 65% voter turnout. And if Bloomberg or Tulsi Gabbard starts a third-party movement, we'll get even more people out voting. I think this is going to be a record year. It'll be the story of the year.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Jeff sees people fired up and inspired to vote, Phil.
And I think so we have competing ideas here, right? There's this sense of sort of hopelessness or lack of connection to the system. But what Jeff's touched on is what we know is actually a consequence of political polarization, is that the more polarized people get into parties, the more they sort into that their identity becomes tied up and the more important voting becomes. So one of the flip sides to increased polarization has actually been a long-term trend of increasing voter participation. You know, we look to the historically what was widely termed the era of good feelings in the United States when the Democratic Party did not even run a candidate for president. And voter turnout was incredibly low. When people feel a connection to the parties, there does tend to be a increase in turnout. That being said, there are still plenty of people who don't feel that connection to the party, and that may be where we're going to get a disconnect between non-voters and turnout.
Jeff, thanks for that call. Time for another caller. Kevin is with us in Janesville. Kevin, hi.
Hi. I vote because it's just part of our social contract as citizens to participate in some way in our society. My suggestion is if you don't vote, let's take the voter rolls at the end of the voting cycle and your name goes to the top of the list for jury duty.
Kevin, thanks a lot for the call. I don't know, it makes jury duty sound like even more of a chore. But Kevin, appealing to that sense of civic duty, mm-hmm. our basic contract as citizens.
Yeah, and I think, again, this is what we know, right? Civic duty or, you know, some kind of connection to the what it means to be a democratic citizen, that varies among people, but absolutely civic duty is a major driver of participation. We know that historically.
Thanks for that call, Kevin. I want to bring up something that the report didn't look at that much. We're talking about a presidential election year. That's high turnout by our standards. Mm-hmm. Local elections, and I've seen, and I can't attribute this, but I've seen people say, wait a minute, the decisions, the local decisions that actually will affect your daily life the most are at local government levels in many cases, and we're even less likely to turn out for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is 100%. Well, I mean, what does it mean to have a decision that affects your
sure.
life, right? We can quantify that in a lot of different ways. But the things that you see, you know, potholes are not solved by the federal government except for maybe some federal highway funds, right? They're not coming, you know, Congress isn't sending people to come fix the pothole in front of your house.
Right.
So there are a lot of things that where local government or state government has at least a more tangible effect on your life. Turnout in what we would term sort of off-year election, not even midterm elections, off-year elections or non-false or off-cycle, so spring elections, dramatically lower. And there you see just a further deepening of the participatory differences around education, around income, around race that play into who has a say in these elections.
And then finally, Phil, this is voting.
Yes.
And some people are saying, wait a minute, voting's great. It's one kind of civic participation. It's not the only kind. Don't stop there. Do we stop there? Are people less likely to be civically engaged in the other ways, going to a political party meeting, the city council meeting, whatever?
You know, I think we've always had sort of a pretty scattershot participation in other forms of political participation. So it's difficult to say, you know, well, we need more participation in this. A lot of that is idiosyncratic, right? If you're going to go to your school board meeting, you're not likely going to your school board meeting unless you have something that's happening there that you think affects your life. Would it be nice to have more participation? I think many elected officials would say yes. We'd absolutely love to hear more from our constituents. There's only so much time in the day. There's only so much time that any individual can devote to the process. So it's not. I don't think it's right to say, like, well, if you don't do these things, mm-hmm. you're failing your duty as a citizen. I think that misses a lot of other external influences on people's lives. So what I would say is be involved if you can, because it's important, and the people who are running for office and representing us, they care about, they do for the most part care about the opinions of their constituents, but they recognize that there are limitations on how well you can participate.
Phil, thanks a lot for joining us.
Anytime.
It's Philip Chen, assistant professor of political science at Beloit College. We looked at a new report on non-voters.